Today is Akshaya Tritiya. The word Akshaya means no end, unending, imperishable results. It's a very special day, Akshaya Tritiya. And when it comes time for the yugas to change, the cycle of yugas, Satyuga, Tritiyuga, Dwapara, and Kali, on this particular day is when it's the beginning of Tritiyuga, begins on this day. Vaishakh Mas, it's a very auspicious month. According to the Padma Purana and other places, this is the appearance day. It's not indicated on our calendar, but this is the appearance day of Parasuram. Parasuram, of course, he appeared in the beginning of Treta Yuga, I suppose. And then you probably heard of Parasuram. Parashur means chopper. Like hatchet or axe or something. Parashur, the word parashur means chopper. So the whole story tells a story. He pursued and killed so many kshatriyas in India because of his anger. So that story is narrated in the ninth canto of Bhagavatam, chapter 16. And you see by hearing this story how the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of, it's a rasa shastra. So rasa means there's the five major rasas, and then there's seven secondary rasas. Astonishment and chivalry and fear and amazement and all these different types of secondary rasas which nourish the main rasa. Like when you're dancing, your face and your hand is, when you're doing this Bharatanatyam dancing, then you're showing these different rasas. You know, fear, there's different fears. There's bhayam. Bhayam is one of the secondary rasas. And they nourish and expand and increase the flavor of the primary ras, which is either friendship, sakhi ras, sakhi bhav or sakabhav, friend of friend, girlfriend, boyfriend, or dasya bhav, master and servant, or vatsalya, mother and son or father and son or child. And then Madhurya, which is conjugal, husband and wife, like lovers, like this. So the Bhagavatam has all these different things. So you hear from this story, Parasuram, the Lord's warrior incarnation. It's called the Lord's warrior incarnation. So he's a pretty, although Ram is also fighting, but he's not called the warrior incarnation. Whatever that is, Yudhya avatar or something, warrior. He's called a Maryada avatar. Although he fought, and he killed so many different demons, and especially noteworthy in Ravana. But he's actually known as Maryada Purushottam. He's the Lord of rules and law and order, law and order Lord. Rules and regulations, Maryada. But Parasharam, he's the warrior incarnation. He's one of the Das Avatar. Jamadagni married Renuka, a daughter of Renu. Then Jamadagni had many sons, headed by Vasuman, who were born from Renuka. The youngest of them was Ram or Parashuram. So the father of Parashuram was Jamadagni, and his mother was Renuka. So it says, Yamahur Vasudevam Sam, Hayayanam Kalantakam, Tri Sapta, Kritwa ya imam chakre ni kshatriyam mahim. Learned scholars accept this Parashuram as a celebrated incarnation of Vasudeva Krishna, who annihilated the dynasty of Kartavirya. Parashuram killed all the kshatriyas on earth 21 times. Driptam kshatram bhuvo bharam abhramanyam aninashat. Rajastamo vritamahan, Falgun yapi krite kritem sahasi. When the royal order became excessively proud because of passion and ignorance, they became irreligious, and they no longer cared to carry out the laws prescribed by the Brahmanas. Therefore, Parashuram killed them. Although their offense was not very severe, he killed them to lessen the burden of the earth. So he's saying that Prabhupada's purport, he's talking about proper government. The government was advised, they were advised by the brahmanas, even as little as maybe 500. Chandragupta's reign of India, when was that? Chandragupta, the Maurya dynasty. So Chanakya Pandit, he was a pundit, he was a brahman, he was the advisor, the brahminical advisor to the king, Chandragupta. And so Chandragupta respected him and followed his advice, and so the kingdom was quite happy and successful at that time. The Prabhupada's saying that in his purport, he talks about the governments nowadays. He said, because now the governments are ruled by third class and fourth class men, they monopolize the affairs of government, and they don't consider anything about the rules and regulations of the brahminical culture. And they try their best to plunder all the money from the citizens without consideration. That's pretty common. The Bofors incident, or the fodder scam of Bihar, Balu. They make crores. That's the people's money. That's nobody else's money but the people's, the taxpayers' money. The leader rips off the money of the followers. That's really appreciated. Imagine if your daughter had savings of 10,000 rupees in her piggy bank and you went in and broke her piggy bank and stole her money. She wouldn't be too happy. The people work hard and then they're taxed, and then the very leader that they've elected rips off all their money. Unbelievable. So then King Prithvi, he inquires from Shukadeva, what was the offense that the Kshatriyas, who could not control their senses, committed before Lord Parashuram, the incarnation of God, for which the Lord annihilated the Kshatriyas again and again? What did they do? What was their offense? So now we'll get in. As I said, the Bhagavatam is full of rasa and suspense. There's romance, there's murder, there's intrigue, there's politics, everything. The whole gamut of life is here. Shukadeva said, the best of the Kshatriyas, Karta Viryarjun, who is the king of the high Hayas, he received 1,000 arms by worshipping Dattatreya, the plenary expansion of God, Narayan. So he was pretty powerful. Somehow he did some puja. And he was a Kshatriya. The Kshatriyas represent the arms of the social body. The Brahmanas represent the head, the guidance, the intelligence. And the arms represent the protective aspect of the social body, metaphorical social body. You protect your body with your arms and hands. And so the Kshatriyas, the warriors or the politicians and soldiers, are supposed to protect the citizens. Then the Vaishyas, they represent the stomach, because they produce food. They grow crops and produce food. And the Shudras represent the legs of the social body, the laborers. So without legs, then your body can't do much. So legs are important. Every part of the body is important: legs, stomach, arms, and head. But obviously the most important is the head. So Brahmins are the most important when they're acting properly and guiding people according to Shastra, and behaving properly in their own lives, and they become very powerful assets to benefit everyone in society. But in Kali Yuga, everyone has become degraded through the influence of the age and their own karmas. So he had 1,000 arms. So being a Kshatriya, 2 arms are pretty good, but 1,000 arms are even better. So this King Kartavirya Arjun, he became undefeatable by his enemies, and he received unobstructed sensory power, beauty, influence, strength, fame, and the mystic power by which to achieve all perfections of yoga, such as anima and lagima. It means he becomes smaller than the smallest and bigger than the biggest. Having become fully opulent, he roamed all over the universe without opposition, just like the wind. He got power, then he used it for his own purposes. Sri Ratner Avrita Kridan Revambasi Madot Kata Vajayantim Shrajam Vibrad Rudroda Saritambuje. Once, while enjoying in the water of the river Narmada, Madhya Pradesh, Narmada River, it's one of the sacred rivers of India, the puffed-up king, Kartavirya Arjun, Surrounded by beautiful women and garlanded with the Vaijanti garland of victory, he stopped the flow of the water with his arms. So sometimes we go in the river and we face the current. The current is coming this way. We put our arms like this and we just put them in the river and we play. And he had 1,000 arms. So he was showing off for his girlfriends, I suppose, as men often do. So then he stuck his arms, he says, "Look, girls, look what I can do. I can dam up this river." So he put his 1,000 arms out and blocked up all the river and made a lake over there. So they were duly impressed. Because King Kartavirya made the water flow in the opposite direction, the camp of Ravana, interesting, Ravana, because this is also a Treta Yuga, which was set up on the bank of the Narmada near the city of Mahishmati, was flooded, inundated. This was unbearable to the ted-headed Ravana, who considered himself a great hero, and he could not tolerate Kartavirya's power. So we have two, the hero and the anti-hero here, two powerful personalities here. Everyone's heard of Ravana, especially you have all heard of Ravana. And now this King Kartavirya. So purport says, Ravana was out touring to gain victory over all the countries, and he had camped on the bank of the Narmada River near the city of Mahishmati. So he left his city of Island of Gold or whatever, Sri Lanka, and he was over in the Narmada River conquering different countries in India. When Ravana attempted to insult Kartavirya in the presence of the women and thus offend him, Kartavirya easily arrested Ravana and put him in custody in the city of Mahishmati. So purport says, Ravana was out touring to gain victory over all the countries, and he had camped on the bank of the Narmada River near the city of Mahishmati. So he left his city of Island of Gold or whatever, Sri Lanka, and he was over in the Narmada River conquering different countries in India. When Ravana attempted to insult Kartavirya in the presence of the women and thus offend him, Kartavirya easily arrested Ravana and put him in custody in the city of Mahishmati, just as one captures a monkey and then released him neglectfully. So Kartavirya was pretty powerful, because Ravana defeated Indra and so many people. So you can imagine Kartavirya. He caught Ravana like a little monkey. You catch a little monkey and put a leash on him and make him do tricks at the traffic light. Right? Once while Kartavirya, in other words, this little interlude is told here just to give an indication, because it's only a couple of verses, because we say he's very powerful. We said, Shukadeva was saying he's invincible. And he's 1,000 arms that he got from worshipping Dattatreya. And he's going everywhere, defeating everyone. So then you might say, well, how invincible was he? So then he gives an example, Lila Vichar. So then this interlude of Bhagavatam is telling us how powerful the Kartavirya is. Because everyone knows the power of Ravana. So once while Kartavirya was wandering and unengaged in a solitary forest hunting, he approached the residence of Jamadagni. Who is Jamadagni? Jamadagni is the father of Parashuram. And who's the mother? Renuka. Kartavirya had no business going to the residence of Jamadagni, but because he was puffed up by his extraordinary power, he went there and offended Parashuram. This was the prelude to his being killed by Parashuram for his offensive act. The sage Jamadagni, who was engaged in great austerities in the forest, because Parashuram is a Brahmin. Parashuram is a Brahmin, his father is a Rishi, but he acted as a Kshatriya, pretty forceful. His father was engaged in great austerities in the forest. He received King Kartavirya very well, along with the king's soldiers, ministers, and carriers. He supplied all the necessities to worship these guests, because he possessed a Kamadenu, cow, that was able to supply everything. Deno means cow and cow means desire. So whatever anything you desire was provided. he only had one cow, but he gave everything. Also, Vashishta Rishi, Vashishta Muni had a Kamadeno cow, and Vishwamitra tried to steal it. That's part of the Puranas. Karta Viryarjun thought that Jamadagni was more powerful than wealthy than himself because he possessed a jewel in the form of the Kamadeno. Therefore, he and his men, the Haihayas, were not very appreciative of Jamadagni's reception. On the contrary, they wanted to steal that Kamadeno and use for Agnihotra sacrifices because they can get unlimited ghee. Being puffed up by material power, Kartavirajan encouraged his men to steal Jamadagni's Kamadeno, just like Vishwamitra tried to steal. Thus the men forcibly took away the crying Kamadeno along with her calf to Mahishmati, Kartavirajan's capital. Kartavirajan left with the Kamadeno, then Parashuram returned to his father's ashram. When he heard about the nefarious deed, he became angry as a trampled snake. Taking up his fierce chopper, his shield, his bow, so Parashuram took up his chopper, Parashum, his bow and quiver of arrows, exceedingly angry, Parashuram chased Kartavirajan like a lion chases an elephant. King Kartavirajan entered his capital, and he saw Lord Parashuram, the best of the Bhrigu dynasty, Bhrigupati Rupa, coming after him holding a chopper, shield, bow and arrows. Lord Parashuram was covered with a black deer skin, and his matted locks of hair appeared like sunshine. Upon seeing Parashuram, Kartavirajan immediately feared him and sent many elephants, chariots, horses and infantry, soldiers equipped with clubs, swords, arrows, Shataghnis and Shaktis, and many weapons to fight against him. Kartavirajan sent 17 Akshohinis of soldiers to check Parashuram. But Parashuram alone killed all of them. That's pretty heavy chopping. Parashuram was expert in killing the military strength of the enemy, worked with the speed of mind and the wind. That's pretty fast. Speed of mind and the wind. Slicing his enemies with his chopper, Parashu. Wherever he went, the enemies fell, their legs, arms, shoulders being severed, the chariot drivers killed, their carriers, elephants, and horses all annihilated. So this is like chivalry, Ras, blood and guts. Right? So the, you know, those kind of people out there, they think, oh, this is great. Action. By manipulating his axe and arrows, Parashuram cut the pieces of shields, flags, bows, bodies of Kartavirajan's soldiers, fell on the battlefield, muddying the ground with their blood. Seeing these reverses in the battlefield, Kartavirajan became infuriated. Then he himself rushed into the battlefield. Ta-da, ta-ta-ta-da-da, do-do-do. Then Kartavirajan, with his 1,000 arms, simultaneously fixed arrows on 500 bows to kill Lord Parashuram. One hand on the bow, one hand on the arrow. Two hands, one bow, 500 bows. But Parashuram, the best of fighters, released enough arrows with only one bow to cut to pieces all the arrows and the bows in the hands of Kartavirajan. When his arrows were cut to pieces, Kartavirajan uprooted many trees and hills with his own hands and rushed strongly towards Lord Parashuram to kill him. But Parashuram used his axe with great force to cut off Kartavirajan's arms, just as one might chop off the hoods of a serpent. Thereafter, Parashuram cut off like a mountain peak, the head of Kartavirajan, who had already lost all his arms. He was still going at it. No arms. All he had was his head. When Kartavirajan's 10,000 sons saw their father killed, they all fled in fear. Let's get out of here. This guy's a madman. Then Parashuram, having killed the enemy, released the Kamadeno, which had undergone great suffering, and brought it back with its calf to his residence, where he gave it to his father, Jamadagni. But evil! Bhagavan Parashurama ki
jai.
Parashurama described to his father and brother his activities. Dad, you know what I did this afternoon? I had a wonderful afternoon. Oh yeah, I used my chopper, I used my axe, and oh, this guy had 1,000 arms, I just knocked him off. Oh, it was fun, it was a lot of fun. Upon hearing these deeds, Jamadagni spoke to his son as follows. Rama Rama Mahabaho Bhavan Papa Makarshit Akarashit Avadin Naradevam Yat Sarva Devamayam Vrita. O great hero, my son Parashuram, you have unnecessarily killed the king, who is supposed to be the embodiment of the demigods. Thus you have committed a sin. Sarvadeva Maya Brita. He's Sarvadeva, all the gods. My dear son, we are all Brahmanas. Yeah, that's what I thought. And we have become worshipable for the people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. It is because of this quality that Lord Brahma, the supreme spiritual master of the universe, has achieved his post. Shama. Shama means forgiveness. This is the primary quality of a Brahman, forgiveness. Shama maya rochate lakshmir Brahmi sauri yata prabha Shaminam ashu bhagavamsh tushite hare ishvaraha. The duty of a Brahman is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. Hari, Bhagavan Hari, is pleased with those who are forgiving. Chanaka Pandit says, the cuckoo bird, we call the quail, although very black in color, is very beautiful because of its voice. It is black. Black is not so beautiful unless you're Krishna. Similarly, a woman becomes beautiful by her chastity and her faithfulness to her husband. Though she may not be physically or attractive, but if she has this quality of chastity, then that's her beauty. An ugly person becomes beautiful when he becomes a learned scholar. In the same way, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras become beautiful by their qualities. Brahmanas are beautiful when they are forgiving. Kshatriyas are heroic and never retreat from fighting. Vaishyas, the Baniyas are business people, they enrich cultural activities and protect cows. In other words, Vaishyas have all the money, so they're supposed to establish schools and dance academies and provide cultural facilities and theaters and stages and places for people to do drama and all these things, because they have the money, so they can do all these welfare activities. Cultural activities and protecting cows. Shudras, they become beautiful when they discharge their duties and give pleasure to their masters. In other words, a good servant. Pretty hard to find. Thus, everyone becomes beautiful by his special qualities. So Jamadagni is describing this quality. My dear son, killing a king who is an emperor is more severely sinful than killing a brahmana. But now, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. That's very nice, Prabhupada's translation. Let's look at the Sanskrit. Because the Sanskrit may be different, but actually we cannot understand the Shastras without Acharyas and Gurus. So their translations and their commentaries, they actually provide understanding what's really going on. Ragyo murdabi shiktasya vado brahma vadad guru tirta sam sevaya chamho jayangachuta chetanaha. Achuta chetanaha. Chitta, your consciousness should be, you should be achuta conscious. Achuta chetanaha. So he's saying, tirtha sam sevaya. You should worship the holy tirthas. So Prabhupada says, if you become Krishna conscious and worship the holy places, you can atone for this great sin. So this is called prayaschitta. When we do something, there are some remedial measures to atone for sin. Of course, if someone does the same thing again after prayaschitta, then they get the full suffering full reaction. Are you saying serve the holy place? And it's Achyuta Chaitana, your Chaitana. Your consciousness should be absorbed in Achyuta. And it's interesting you use the word Achyuta because Achyuta means infallible. Achyuta means he doesn't fail, doesn't fall down. So the implication is, at least we see it this way, the Jamadagni, his Brahminical father, is teaching his wayward son that you've fallen from your position as a proper Brahmin. You didn't forgive the transgression of this Sarvadeva, this God among men. They say the king is God among men. He's called Naradeva. The king is referred to as Naradeva. Nara means human being. Narahari, half human, half lion. Because the word Hari also means lion in Sanskrit. Narahari. Keshava Drita Narahari Rupa. So he says, you're Naradeva. You are a Deva. You are a God among men, Nara. So this is the king. Kings are known as Naradeva. But you have fallen from your proper position as a Brahman. You should have forgiven him. So then he's saying you should become Achyuta Chaitana. He could have said Madhava Chaitana, or Vishnu Chaitana, or Narayan Chaitana, or Krishna Chaitana. But he said Achyuta Chaitana, because this specific name of Bhagavan who doesn't fall from his position, he's infallible, the infallible Lord. He doesn't fail, he doesn't fall. He's always fixed in his position. He always acts correctly and perfectly and properly and justly and rightly. And I heard a very nice definition of Achyuta, which was rather very devotional, that Achyuta means that Lord who never fails to reciprocate with the love of his devotees. Because generally we find in the material world we may love someone very dearly, but then they don't love us back. And you may find as you go on in life, you fall in love with someone, and you're really dedicated to them, and then they say, oh, I love you so much, and then they leave you. Goodbye. It happens. So the Lord is not like that. Krishna is not like that. He's Prem Purushottam. He's the Lord of love. He's the embodiment of love, the perfect love, the purest love, most beautiful and sweet and harmonious love. He's Achyuta. So if someone directs their love towards God, or offers their loving feelings towards God, they will never be cheated. He will never let them down. They say let down. There's a slang phrase in America called let down. I was let down. Oh, sometimes they say, oh, she's a let down. Or something. You let me, even we have that phrase in social dealings. Oh, you let me down. I counted on you. You let me down. You were supposed to give me your paper for the exam. You didn't give me your paper. I was counting on you. You let me down. So, Bhagavan, Krishna, Achyuta never lets down. He never fails to reciprocate. And he says that in so many places. He says, Nehabhikramo nashasti pratyavayo navidyate swapamapyasya dharmasya trayate matobayat. He says, swapamapyasya dharmasya. He said, even if you do a little dharmic activity, I'll be happy, I'll reciprocate with you. I'll give you so much. As Prabhupada often says, if you take one step towards God, then God will take 10 steps towards us. And he's saying that, Patram pushpam phalam toyam. You just offer me a leaf or a flower with love and I'll give you my love in return. You can win the heart of God with a leaf. Can you imagine winning someone's heart with a leaf? You can win the heart of God with a leaf. You take a tulsi leaf and you dip it in chandan and you offer it at the feet of the Lord and you can capture his heart. It's taught like this in Shastra. Krishna's saying, anyone who offers me with devotion a tulsi leaf, he becomes my ward, he becomes my protected friend, my intimate confidant. So can you imagine, Supreme Lord himself becomes the dearmost friend of someone just for offering a leaf. Can you imagine going up to some movie star in Bollywood? Oh, I would like to win your hand. Oh, well, what do you have to offer? I will give you one leaf, one tulsi leaf. Oh, acha, very nice, and you here you take me. Lock, stock, and barrel, I'm yours. Yeah, the lady would say, how many crores you have? what kind of bungalow you have, what kind of income you have, so much you have to have just to get some cheap movie star from Bollywood, right? But God, the source of all creation, is that you can win my heart with a tulsi leaf. So Prabhupada, of course, for Prabhupada, every name of God is Krishna. Because Chuta means Krishna also. And whenever it says, any place in the Shastra it says Nam Sankirtan, or that everyone was engaged in chanting the holy name, Nam Sankirtan or Nam Kirtan, Prabhupada translates, and everyone was chanting Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Everyone was chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. Just as the Sanskrit or the Bengali says Nam Sankirtan or Nam. So Nam Sankirtan means Hari Haraya Nama Krishna Yadavaya Madhavaya Keshavaya Namaha, or Gopala Govinda Ram Srimadhu Sadam Giridhari Gopinatha Madana Mohan Jai Govinda Jai Gopal Keshava Madhava Dina Dayal Asuta Keshava Sridhara Madhava Govinda Gopala Hari Achyuta Keshava Sridhara Madhava Gopala Govinda Hari Jai Govinda Jai Gopal Keshava Madhava Dina Dayal Dina Dayal Prabhu Dina Dayal Dina Dayal Prabhu Dina Dayal. So many names were there, Nam Sankirtan. But for Prabhupada, so he's always giving us Krishna. Because Krishna is the topmost form of Godhead. Swayam Bhagavan, Sri Krishna. So Prabhupada doesn't want to give us anything less. Doesn't want to give us Achyuta or Madhava or Narayana or Vishnu. Krishna, 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 Krishna. Nam Sankirtan means chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And people find issue with this. These different scholars and Gaudiya scholars and Brahmins. Hey, what are your gurus not translating correctly? As they're seeing, and in the book it says this sub bhakta log Nam Sankirtan Karte, or whatever, all the bhaktas were chanting Nam Sankirtan. So many Govinda Jaya Jaya Gopala Jaya, that's Nam Sankirtan. The Prabhupada said all the devotees gathered together to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So they slight Prabhupada, they fault Prabhupada, but this is his bhushanam, this is his ornament. Because Prabhupada wants to remind everyone, he's not wrong, he's right. And it's his realized translation. That's his poetic license, like the Acharya's poetic license. The Yuga Acharya. He's the Yuga Acharya. So his poetic license is that this is the age for Nam Sankirtan, that Radha and Krishna have come to propagate the Maha Mantra. Not Radhe Krishna, Radhe Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Radhe Radhe. That's Nimbark. Nimbarki, Nimbark Sampradaya, it's a bona fide Vaishnav Sampradaya, and they propagate Sakhi Bhav, worship of Radharani, which is most akin to our Gaudiya Sampradaya. But that, this Nimbarki was 1,000 years ago, and he was an Acharya, an empowered Acharya, to represent the will of the Lord. But then the Lord himself came. Sakshat Krishna came and Sakshat Radha came. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahayanya. Nahayanya, Nahayanya, they're none other than Radha and Krishna. Radharani came herself, Sakshat Radha and Sakshat Krishna, as Gauranga Mahaprabhu. And they said, and they said, that you should chant this mantra, not Radha Krishna, Radha Krishna. But they came. And it sounds so sweet, Radhe Krishna, Radhe. You know, the guy's got a great voice, no doubt. Whoever it is, Mridu Krishna, whoever it is, I don't know. Wonderful voice, and it sounds so sweet. But they came and propagated Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So what is Prabhupada saying? Prabhupada is simply speaking on behalf of Radha and Krishna. Whenever it's Nam Sankirtan, it's Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. So we don't have any problem with Prabhupada's translation. It's perfect. It's flawless. It's giving the perfect Siddhanta for this age of Kali. There's no other Lord but Krishna in this age, and his eternal consort, Radharani. And the mantra to worship Radha and Krishna is the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. They came, we're Radha and Krishna, you want to worship us? Chant this mantra. Oh, but wait a minute, but 1,000 years ago the Nimbarka was saying you worship Radha and Krishna with Radha Krishna Mantra. Okay, that was then, now is now. That was Nimbarki's viewpoint. want to follow Nimbark? You want to follow us? Well, I guess I'm following you. You are Radhakrishna. You don't have to think about it. What does it mean? Nimbark is an acharya. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Bhagavan. Although they try to lump them together. Lord Chaitanya Gauranga Mahaprabhu is another acharya, and Nimbark and Madhvacharya. No, it's a big difference. Lord Chaitanya is Sakshat Radha and Krishna. So Radha and Krishna themselves are coming and say, you want to worship me? Yeah, oh yeah. Because I know many devotees, they come and say, oh, why don't we just, this mantra is indirect, why don't we chant Radha? Hare, you know, Hare means Radharani, and Ram means Sham. And so why don't we just chant Radha Krishna, Radha Sham? And a few weak-minded, simplistic devotees have left Gaudiya Mission in Vrindavan and gone to Nimbark. They're really missing out the mercy. The God Himself, Radha and Krishna, have come themselves 500 years ago to walk the length and breadth of India. Radha and Krishna personally walked the length and breadth. Krishna left Vrindavan to walk the length and breadth of India to propagate the glorification of their holy names. Hare Krishna Mahamantra. Lord Chaitanya is chanting. So it's pretty clear that this is the mantra certified and propagated by Radha and Krishna themselves. So we have the right mantra. We're doing quite all right. So Prabhupada's purport here is, one who fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God, it is freed from all sins. From the very day, Sarva Dharman Pritya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja Aham Tvam Sarva Papevyo Mokshesri Masuchaha. Ekam sharanam, mam eka sharanam. One shelter, one surrender. Surrender to me alone, not to Shiva, not to Parvati, not to your grandmother, and all the other pictures you have on your altar. But we only need one picture, Radha and Krishna. Guru Angaranga and Radha and Krishna. So it's saying here, from the very day or moment that one fully surrenders to Sri Krishna, even the most sinful person is freed. This is a very powerful statement. Prabhupada is giving us elucidation. This is, you could say, Prabhupada's tika also in the Gita verse. Because he's talking about, because the context is that Jamadagni, the father of Parashuram, he's reprimanding his son for a misdeed that you got angry because he's told the Kamadena. You could have simply gone and told him that if you don't give me the Kamadena back, I'll kill you, or whatever. But you went and annihilated all of his soldiers, 17 Akshahinis of soldiers, and you annihilated the king. He's the king of the high clan of people. Just like in India, you have the Marwaris, and you have the Jats, and all these different groups of people, the Punjabi tribe or Punjabi nation. That's a nation, I suppose. Punjabis, and they had a king, and then there was the Sindhis with a Sindhi king and a Punjabi king, Marwar and Mewar, the Mewar king. So the Hai-Hais were a group of people living in India, and he was their king. He was like the prime minister. Instead of one country, India had hundreds of countries, as you know, Indian history. Desh, there were so many Deshas, individual countries. And they're always fighting and warring with each other. So you killed the leader. Now what will the people do? There's no leader. Like if somebody, some Bin Laden comes here and kills the prime minister, it's not very good. And all hell breaks out, at least temporarily. Like what happened with Gandhi. Indira Gandhi got knocked off. It was a big wild scene in India, right? At least in North India, all the Hindus, Muslims going crazy. So his father, they're Brahmins. And he said, you're a Brahmin. You're acting like a Kshatriya, okay, you can do But you're called a warrior incarnation. But in this case, killing Kartavirya Arjuna, although he's still my Kamadena, this is very bad. So now you have to purify yourself. You did sin, you did pop, so now you have to do prayaschitta. And what is a prayaschitta? Then it was recommended. The prayaschitta comes from the guru. The guru gives a prayaschitta, or the shastra. The shastras have specific prayaschitta for different sins. So here he's saying that if you become God conscious or Krishna conscious, achyuta chaitana, and worship holy places, then you can atone for this great sin. So you see the value of holy places. Tirtha samsevaya. The tirthas are very powerful, holy places. And this Vrindavan is not a tirtha, it's a dham. It's like 1,000 times more powerful than all the tirthas already contained here. They're like nothing compared to this holy Dham. This is the Dham. Tirthas are purifying, and they free us from sins, and they give us Sukriti. We may even develop enough. If we die in a tirtha, we can get moksha. There are 7 moksha puris in India, Kashi and Ayodhya and Mathura, Vishnukanchi maybe, I forget. But there's 7 different cities if you die there. They're tirthas. If you die there, you get moksha. But that automatically happens in Vrindavan. But moreover, when you live in the Dham, the holy Dham of Gauranga, Navadvipa Dham, or Vrindavan Dham, you can get praying. The holy Dham can give you praying. The Braja Raj or the Govardhan or the Jamuna. You can get actual Krishna praying, full love of God, and realize your Siddhadeya and your Sarup and enter the eternal pastimes of the Lord to serve eternally. Whereas you die in a tirtha, you may get liberation, which means some kind of shantaras, or again, there's different kinds of liberation also, but tirthas can't give prem. Well, this type of prem is available in Krishna's Dham, is extraordinary. So this gives us an idea of the power of the holy place. So he's saying, worship all the holy places and remember Krishna. So that's the Gita. Anyone who surrenders. So he's saying, Achyuta Chaitana. Achyuta Chaitana means your consciousness should be fixed on Achyuta. So if your consciousness is fixed on Achyuta, that means you're surrendering to Achyuta. Achyuta Chaitana. Krishna conscious. So Prabhupada says you should become Krishna conscious. So if you're Krishna conscious, then Krishna tells, oh, you're taking shelter of me. You're Krishna conscious. So therefore, I will reciprocate with you. Sarva papebhyo moksha ishami. I will free you, moksha. Moksh, sarva pap. All your sin I'll free you from. So then Prabhupada gives a very special, and draws this out a little more specifically. Prabhupada saying, from the one who fully surrenders to the Supreme Personality of God, it is freed from all sins. From the very day or moment he fully surrenders to Sri Krishna, even the most sinful person is freed. Nonetheless, as an example, Jamadagni advised his son, Parashuram, to worship the holy places. Because an ordinary person cannot immediately surrender to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is advised to go from one holy place to another to find saintly persons and thus gradually be released from sinful reactions. Well, that's very nice. Because I didn't see this purport. I just spoke about holy places are so powerful. But Prabhupada is explaining by Prabhupada's, because we might ask the question, well, Jamadagni told his son, you did a sin, now be Krishna conscious. So that should be enough. Just be Krishna conscious. Think of God. God is a papavidham. A papavidham, he purifies. Just by thinking of him, you become purified of all sins. But he told him, be God conscious, Achyuta Chaitana, think of Achyuta, but also worship all the holy places. So then the question will be, well, why do you have to do that separately? If you're thinking of God all the time, then that God is the Supreme Sun. Krishna Surya, then all impurities will be removed just by thinking of God. That's enough. Krishna Smaran. That's pure bhakti, Krishna Smaran. What else do you have to do? Why did Jamadagni suggest or recommend or order his sinful son Parashuram to also worship all the holy places? Why is that? So then Prabhupada explains. Yes, if you can be Ekam Sharanam, Krishna Ekam Sharanam, if you can actually surrender to Krishna, because Krishna says Sarvadharman Prityaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja. If you can actually surrender to Krishna, then you'll get the result. You'll get free from all your sins. That very moment. The very moment or very day that you surrender to Krishna, you're free from your sins. Then the next question is, but that's not so easy. it says fully surrender. Use the word Prabhupada. It says one who fully surrenders, not like partially or lip service surrender or I surrender, but you know, that's only words. Nothing, no backing. So one who fully surrenders, so the Jamadagni is saying this is the atonement that you fully surrender. And then if you can't do that, if you're not quite surrendered enough to surrender, or not quite intelligent or realized enough to surrender, then you should go to holy places. You should worship all the holy places. Why? Well, I gave my idea that they're purifying and you can get framed. But then Prabhupada is just saying that, why he said go to the holy places? Because in the holy places are the saintly people. Generally, saintly people frequent the holy places. Either they're on their own yatras or they live there. They're going on their own yatras to visit holy places. Like sometimes you go to Jagannath, you're a saintly people, you go to Jagannath Puri or whatever. And so, or they live there. They have their ashrams in the holy places, in Chitrakoot and Ayodhya and Vrindavan and Haridwar, Mathura. So many ashrams of saints and rishis. So the idea of going to holy place, not just go to the holy place, but as they say, go to the holy place and meet the sages. And when you meet the rishis there, then they're going to give you some shiksha. They're going to give you some teachings. And then they're going to say, oh, why don't you surrender to God? What is your problem? You should surrender to Krishna. Then you argue, well, why should I surrender? Or you'll say, how should I surrender? And then they'll convince you why you should surrender. And they'll teach you how to surrender. And then, so that's the roundabout the way. Either directly you fully surrender, achyuta chaitana, and you get free from all your sins. Or if you can't do that, then go to holy places. And not just go to holy places, but seek out the realized souls there. Prabhupada says he was advised to go from one holy place to another and find saintly persons, and thus gradually become released from sinful reactions. Because by seeing sadhus and by going on yatra itself, it's called padasevanam. So gradually it develops sukriti, and that in a very slow way removes the sinful reactions from our heart. This is Lord Parashram destroys the ruling class. The last chapter closed with his father saying, be Krishna conscious and visit the holy places. So Lord Parashram was given this order by his father. He immediately agreed, saying, let it be so, tatastu. And he went on a tirthayatra. For 1 year he traveled to all the holy places, then returned to his father's residence. But as I said, Bhagavatam is full of intrigue, full of suspense, full of romance, full of all kinds of emotions. So he did it. He was thinking of God. He went on Tirtha for 1 year, Tirtha Yatra for 1 year. Like Balaram went on Tirtha Yatra during the Kurukshetra War. Nityananda also went on Tirtha Yatra waiting for Lord Chaitanya to grow up and start the Sankirtan movement. It's very common. But the story gets a little thicker now. Once the mother of Parashuram, Renuka, the wife of Jamadagni, went to the Ganga to bathe. She saw King Chitrarath, the king of the Gandharvas, decorated with a lotus garland, sporting in the Ganga with celestial women, apsaras. There's a lot of sporting going on in these pages. They know how to enjoy it. Renuka had gone there to collect Ganga water, but when she saw the king of the Gandharvas sporting with the celestial girls, she felt somewhat inclined toward him and failed to remember that the time for the yajna was passing. Later, understanding that the time for offering a sacrifice had passed, Renuka feared a curse from her husband. Therefore, when she returned, she simply put the water pot before him and stood there with folded hands. The great sage Jamadagni understood the adultery in the mind of his wife. Because previously, this is Treta Yuga. So in Treta Yuga and Dwapar and Satya, there's three ways one can commit sin. Kayo Manovakya. Body, mind, and words. You can commit sin with your body, adultery or rape or murder, all these things. You can commit sin with your thoughts, sinful thoughts. And you can commit sin with your words. It's a sin to speak. To lie is a sin. To speak, to offend someone is a sin. So these are also sins. So one would have to do prayaschit or atonement to free oneself from these sins. And even Jesus is preaching in the Bible, which was Kali Yuga, but early on in Kali Yuga, a couple thousand years ago, It's like, say, 3,000 years into Kali Yuga, he was preaching. But he was saying, he who lusts after a woman is the same as if he laid down with that woman. So some man, he looks lustfully at a woman. It's the same as if he went to bed with that woman, had illicit relation. This was Jesus' strict teaching. So this is what's being said here, that the wife of Jamadagni, Renuka, she had gone to collect Ganga water for the yajna. And she saw this king of the Gandharvas, Chittarath, enjoying, and he's very, obviously very beautiful, handsome Gandharva. And she became a little bit, I guess, lustier, had some desire. She committed some adultery in the mind. She was thinking, oh, he's so beautiful, strong and handsome. She thought some enjoying desires, only thinking. And this great rishi, the sage, the Trikala Gyan, the Trikala Drishti, he can see past, present, and future. And it's not a great mystic power to be able to read the minds of other people. And it's not, one can get this power quite easily, to be able to read minds and understand the movements of someone's mind. Even in Kali Yuga, this power can be gotten. So he was very angry, and he told his sons, "My dear sons, kill this sinful woman." Because that's the punishment when you commit adultery. According to the Manusamhita, murder should be killed. But the sons did not carry out the order. Jamadagni then ordered his youngest son, because usually the youngest son is the sneha, the affection goes to the youngest son, Parashram, to kill his brothers who had disobeyed his order and his mother. So this is pretty exciting, isn't it? You talk about our shastras aren't boring. Imagine this is a lot of suspense and drama, suspense, emotions. What's going to happen? His son is going to kill his mother. The youngest son is going to kill. He's going to kill his brothers. And he's God. He's a dasavatar. Keshava Rupa, Keshava Drita, Brigupati Rupa. Is it possible? His father, he said, they disobeyed my order, and his mother, who had mentally committed adultery. Lord Parashuram, knowing the power of his father, who has practiced in meditation and austerity, killed his mother and brother immediately. Interesting. Jamadagni, the son of Satyavati, was very pleased with Parashuram, and he asked him to take any benediction he liked. And Lord Parashuram said, "Yes, let my mother and brothers live again and not remember having been killed by me. This is the benediction I ask." Pretty smart. He said, "Bring my mother and son, my brothers back to life and make them forget that I killed them." They probably wouldn't appreciate that. By the benediction of Jamadagni, Lord Parashuram's mother and brothers immediately came alive and were very happy, as if awakened from a sound sleep. So this is a wonderful story. Imagine seeing this. If you never knew this story, you're watching this on stage, on drama. Now you see sometimes magicians, they come out and they cut somebody in half with a saw or whatever. And the head goes this way. It's like magic. P.C. Sarkar does this thing. And head falls off the body, and you see it rolling on the stage, blood, and it's like, it's all magic. How they do it, I don't know. So if they can do that, what about Krishna's Achinti Shakti, what he can do? If P.C. Sarkar can do that, create the illusion, you think a head is falling off. I saw it, you know, you see it, he's going, and the head goes, the blood goes, and the curtain closes. Everybody goes, "Wow." It's like, so they do, like somehow it gets in your mind. I don't know how they do it, but they do it. They've done it. Famous guy. So the power is there. Jamadagni brought them back to life. King Parashram had killed his relatives in accordance with his father's order because he was fully aware of his father's power, austerity, and learning. The sons of Kartavirya Arjun, remember Kartavirya Arjun, who were defeated by the superior strength of Parashuram, never achieved happiness, for they always remembered the killing of their father. Because Parashuram wiped out their father. Once, when Parashuram left the ashram for the forest with Vasuman and his other brothers, the sons of Kartavirjarjun took the opportunity to approach Jamadagni's residence to seek vengeance for their grudge. Now just see the nature of Kshatriyas. I mean, these chapters are an amazing blood and guts story. I mean, if you want blood and guts, if you want romance and sweetness, then Krishna Leela, then Ras Leela, and Holi, and all these sweet things. But that comes in 10th canto. First and 9th canto, we have to get all this blood and guts out of our consciousness. Because this is all about greed, and it's all about envy, and it's all about pride. This is what, and anger. This is what all Kshatriyas are about. Pride, greed, anger, envy, lust. So all these qualities, these are all qualities that we've heard in these discussions here. Lust. Jamadagni's wife was lusty for the king of the demigods. She committed adultery. That means lust. Uncontrolled lust, and she's a Brahmani. Then anger. So before we can do Braja Bhajan and be qualified for Braja Bhajan, all these have to come out. Kam, Krodh, Lobh, Moha, Matsarya, Chaito Dharpana Marjan. So the Bhagavatam is doing Chaito Dharpana Marjan. It's cleansing. Okay, let's get the greed out of our consciousness. Let's get the anger. Let's get the lust. Let's get all out. Okay, now let's start with Krishna's childhood pastimes and appreciate the sweetness and the godhood of a baby can be God. Damodar can be God. And then, oh really? Okay, I accept that. And then, okay, if you accept that, then you can accept the Ignatius of others' wives. And gradually increase the conception. So this is really heavy. This whole thing is just full of, you killed him and I killed you and you chopped you. This is like some gory, horrible movie. You know, mothers getting chopped off and brothers, and it's like something out of the newspapers. Guy killed his wife, then killed his mother, and killed his three brothers and shot himself. I mean, you read things in newspaper like that. Chopped the head off his wife and all this. But the problem is you can't bring him back to life. So now, Kartavirjarjun, in the last chapter, he stole the Kamadhenu of Jamadagni, remember? And then Parashuram was angry over that, so he went and he not only got the Kamadhenu back, but he killed all the soldiers of Kartavirjarjun, and then he killed Kartavirjarjun also. And all the sons of Kartavirjarjun ran to the hills, ran to save their lives. But they never forgot that. Never happy that our son, our father got slaughtered by this Parashuram. So they were always thinking, when will we get revenge? Revenge. And we just heard about, in the last chapter close, about forgiveness. Jamadagni is saying, listen, you're a Brahmin, you should have forgiven the king. This is the sun-like quality of a Brahmin, which illuminates his whole personality. This is his primary quality, his mukhya gun. This is mukhya lakshana. The primary characteristic of a brahmana is his forgiveness, power of forgiveness, shama. Without that, you're not a brahman. Nowadays, you see brahmins, they get so angry and so vengeful and so, oh, you don't get money. Oh, where's the forgiveness? Well, forgive me. I gave you 100 rupees. Give me a break. So, this is... So we're hearing about that Parashuram is advised to be forgiving. And now, what about the other Kshatriyas, Kartavirjarjun's sons? They weren't too forgiving. They were full of vengeance, full of anger and vengeance. So now they've come to Jamadagni's residence. Now who is there in the residence, in the hermitage of Jamadagni? There's this old man, Jamadagni, this old Brahmin, and his wife. What's his wife's name?
Renuka.
Now all his sons are out. They've gone out. The sons of Kartavirjarjun were determined to commit sinful deeds. Therefore, when they saw Jamadagni sitting by the side of the fire to perform yajna, and he was meditating upon God, who is praised by the best of selected prayers, Bhagavat Uttama Shloka, they took the opportunity to kill him. Imagine the scenes. You know, you're in the drama, the scene. Yagya is there. Because part of when you're doing yagya, first you chant so many rounds. They have a mala and they chant so many rounds of Gopal mantra. Sometimes they do swaha, then they start. They do preliminary dig. They worship the digpals in different directions and swaha, so on, and then they stop and they chant They have a set of beads, 108 mala, and they meditate. They chant Gopal mantra or some other guru mantra, some mantra, and they meditate. So the fire is burning, and he's meditating, and these kshatriyas now will kill him. With pitiable prayers, Renuka, the mother of Parashuram and the wife of Jamadagni, begged for the life of her husband. But the sons of Kartavyarjun, being devoid of the qualities of kshatriyas, were so cruel that despite her prayers, they forcibly cut off his head and took it away. And these are amazing chapters. And there's a lot of blood and guts here, a lot of virya ras, chivalry, virya. Vira is called vira ras, chivalry, fighting, blood and guts, astonishment, vismay, wonder, adbhuta, amazing, and astonishment, chamatkar, all these secondary rasas. It's like, wow. Don't kill my husband, oh, I beg you. You can imagine, please. No, she's falling on her and they say, ah, shut up, lady. So it's funny because when you think about karma, because he ordered his wife and get her head cut off, now he got his head cut off. You know, what goes around comes around also, but you know, in one sense. But there was no one there to make his head come back. Lamenting in grief for the death of her husband, the most chaste Renuka struck her body with her hands and cried loudly, "Oh Ram, my dear son Ram!" It's Parashuram. Although the sons of Jamadagni, including Parashuram, were a long way from home, as soon as they heard Renuka's loud calling, "Oh Ram, my son," they hastily returned to the ashram, where they saw their father was already killed. Virtually bewildered by grief, anger, indignation, affliction, and lamentation, the sons of Jamadagni cried, "Oh Father, most religious saintly person, you have left us and gone to the heavenly planets." Thus lamenting, Lord Parashuram entrusted his father's dead body to his brother, and he personally took up his axe, having decided to put an end to all the kshatriyas on the surface of the world. The kshatriyas did this cruel act. A rishi, a brahmin, meditating on Bhagavan at a yajna. You couldn't get a better combination of sin than that. Killing a brahmin during a yajna in meditation. And a chaste lady begging to forgive him and not kill him. So the question is asked, why did Parashuram kill the kshatriyas 21 times? Well, it's out of revenge. Every action has a reaction, cause and effect. Every effect has a cause. He didn't just go around for no reason. He had a reason.
What does it mean, 21 times?
Well, we'll find out. But he killed, as far as I know, he killed all the kshatriyas. But he didn't kill the children of the kshatriyas, the Yuvaraj. So the Yuvarajas, they grew up and became the kings, and he killed them. 21 generations, he was fired up. There's something about 21, I don't know why 21, this number means something, 21. But he killed 21, the population of kshatriyas, the earthly population of kshatriyas, he killed 21. And for a few thousand years he was killing, they would grow up and they'd live to be 100 or 200, whatever they lived to be. Lord Parashuram went to Mahishmati, the capital of the former king Kartavirajan, which was already doomed by the sinful killing of a Brahmin. In the midst of that city, he made a mountain of heads severed from the bodies of the sons of Kartavirajan. With the blood of the bodies of these sons, Parashuram created a ghastly river, which brought great fear to the kings who had no respect for Brahminical culture. Because the kshatriyas, the men of power and government, were performing sinful activities. Lord Parashuram, on a plea of retaliating for the murder of his father, rid all the kshatriyas from the face of the earth 21 times. Indeed, in that place known as Samanta Panchaka, he created 9 lakes filled with their blood. So he killed them 21 times consecutively because they were disobedient to the Brahminical culture. So every group of kshatriyas that grew up, they were also the same way. Prabhupada's purport, he says that If the government is irresponsible and sinful, not caring for Brahminical culture like now, there will certainly be an incarnation of God like Parashuram to create devastation by fire, famine, pestilence, or some other calamity. So all these calamities are incarnations of God. Either Parashuram personally as a person came and destroyed everyone, or everyone's destroyed by AIDS, or everyone's destroyed by cancer, or everyone's destroyed by heart attack. So these are incarnations of God. These are reactions of sin. And disregarding Brahminical culture. Whenever the government disrespects the supremacy of God and fails to protect the institution of Varnashram Dharma, that government will certainly have to face such catastrophes as formerly brought about by Lord Parashuram. Thereafter, Parashuram joined his father's head to the dead body and placed the whole body and head upon Kushagras. By offering sacrifices, he began to worship Lord Vasudeva, the all-pervading supersoul of all the demigods and every living entity. After completing his sacrifice, Lord Parashuram gave the eastern direction to the Hota as a gift, the south to the Brahma, the west to the Advarya, the north to the Udgata, the four corners, northeast, southeast, northwest, southwest, to the other priests. He gave the middle to Kashyap and a place known as Aryavart to the Upadrashta. Whatever remained, he distributed among the Sadasyas, the associate priests. Thereafter, having completed the ritualistic sacrificial ceremonies, Parashuram took bath, known as Avavrityasna. Standing on the Saraswati River, cleared of all sins, Parashuram appeared like the sun in a clear, cloudless sky. Thus, Jamadagni, worshipped by Lord Parashuram, was brought back to life. Harivo! Jamadagni ki! Bhagavan Parashuram ki! Jamadagni was brought back to life with full remembrance, and he became one of the seven sages in the group of seven stars. The seven stars, it's called the Saptarishis, right? Revolving around the pole star at the zenith, are called the Saptarishi Mandala. We call it the Big Dipper. You call it the Big Dipper? Oh, you don't know anything about stargazing? If you look up in the sky at night, there's four stars like this. It looks like a... And then it's four stars, like one here, just like that. And then going off this star, there's like three stars. Go doot, doot, doot. It looks like a ladle.
Well, we call that the kite formation, no? Is that
no.
What
you No, it's no. A ladle. It looks like a ladle. You know, like a ladle you scoop
yes.
out dal.
Yes, yes.
These two are this is the spoon part, and then it goes up on top as the handle. They call it the Big Dipper. There's a Little Dipper. In Latin, it's called Ursa Major or Ursa Minor. In Greek. I don't know what you must have some Hindi name for. It's very prominent. So those are the Saptarishis planets. So the seven rishis are Kashyap Muni, Atri Muni, Vashishta, Vishramrita, Gotam, Jamadagni, and Bharadwaj. And obviously they were Rajarishis. They were kings, Kshatriyas, and they were rishis. So they have dynasties. Some of them. Like people say, what is your Gotra? People say, oh, Bharadwaj Gotra, Kasyap Gotra, Kapil Gotra, right? So these are Gotam Gotra. These seven stars are seen every night, and they each make a complete orbit around the pole star within 24 hours. Maybe that's something. In the next Manvantara, the lotus-eyed personality of Godhead, Lord Parashuram, the son of Jamadagni, will be a great propounder of Vedic knowledge. In other words, he will become one of the seven sages. Lord Parashuram still lives as an intelligent Brahmin in the mountainous region known as Mahendra Parvat. Completely satisfied, having given up all the weapons of a Kshatriya, he is always worshipped, adored, and offered prayers for his exalted character and activities by such celestial beings as Siddhas, Charanas, and Gandharvas. In this way, the Supreme Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord, Supreme Controller, descended as an incarnation in the Bhrigu dynasty and released the universe from the burden of undesirable kings by killing them many times. Bhrigupati Rupa. Well, this is a story of Bhagavan Parashuram. Bhagavan Parashurama ki. Just to, because they say that for Brijvasis, all roads lead to Vrindavan. During Caesar's time, there was a phrase that all roads lead to Rome, because he expanded his empire everywhere, all the way to England and Scotland and Thailand and all around the place. But he had built roads, Hadrian's Road or whatever, different roads, and those roads led to Rome. Rome was the capital of the empire. So for the devotee, the capital of the spiritual empire is Vrindavan. This is the capital of all the spiritual planets. There's millions of Vaikuntha planets, and the topmost planet is Vrajagokul, Goloka Vrindavan. So this is the capital. So the ultimate abode of Ras, the ultimate reservoir of love and prema is Vrajadham. So all roads lead to Vrindavan. So to take the story of Parasaram and bring it to Vrindavan, we can take the advantage of the teachings of Rupa Goswami. So Rupa Goswami, he's written some very beautiful books full of rasa and full of practical teachings. So one book is called Hamsadutta. There's Hamsadutta and Uddhava Sandesh. So in this Hamsadutta is a message. Krishna has gone to Mathura with Akura. Krishna and Balaram were taken there. And then the gopis meet a swan. They're on the banks of the Yamuna. And they meet a swan, and then Radharani is practically unconscious in separation from Krishna. So when they meet this swan, and Lalita addresses the swan, Hamsadutta. Dutta means carrier. Vishnadutta. Carrier Vishnu. Vishnadutas, Yamadutas. So they speak to this swan and say, listen, why don't you carry a message for us? And they, of course, they're treating him like he's a human being. Please, you fly over to Mathura and you speak to Krishna on our behalf. You give him a message that we really miss him and he should come back right away. And before you go, because it's a long dialogue, it's a play actually. So before you go, to Mathura, make sure you see Barsana, make sure you see Govardhan, make sure you see Radhakund, and they describe all the places. And then at the very end of their message, the gopis are saying, they're remembering the different incarnations of the Lord. And so they go through the 10 incarnations and give it a little bit of twist by connecting Krishna, Vrindavan Krishna, Vrajaraj Krishna, Damodar, connecting him and his behavior, his treatment of them, as if he's one of the 10 avatars. And for example, they say, I'll give you an example here. They say, so this is the very end of their message. They're kind of, in other words, it's a little sarcastic. They're kind of ribbing him or whatever. For example, they say, they talk about the boar incarnation, Varaha, because they go through all 10. So the Varaha incarnation, he came, the earth had fallen down to the Garbhadak ocean because of Hiranyaksha. He knocked it down there. So it was in a dirty place. It's like the bottom of the universe. The bottom of a lake is full of mud and all junky stuff. So the Garbhadak ocean, the earth was fallen down to the Garbhadak ocean. So then, if you want to pick something up from a filthy place, well, the animal that's known for that is the sewer. Or the pig, because he has his tusks and he has his nose and he just puts it in the ground and digs up stool or whatever. He can lift up things. So then Krishna came as Varaha and he lifted up the earth and put it back in its proper orbit. So now remembering the different avatars, they're making insinuations. The gopis are insinuating, oh, Krishna, now you've gone to Mathura? Now you're acting like a boar? You're acting like a pig again? They're saying, oh Krishna, since ancient times, back in Satyuga, and even now in Dwapara Yuga, the waves of deep love, and even today, the waves of deep love splash on your form of a boar. On your lap you placed a servant girl that carried sandal paste. You passionately accepted her as your beloved. They say, oh enemy of Kamsa, once again you have demonstrated the behavior of a pig. By taking Kubja, the servant girl of a low class, to your heart while she was taking sandalwood paste for King Kamsa. Thus you made her your wife, just as in your boar incarnation you picked up the earth from the mud at the bottom of the universe and made her your wife. So they're saying, oh, you became a pig and you lifted the earth. Now you went to Mathura, some Shudra girl bent over hunchback carrying sandalwood paste. Now you know, what's happened to you? You become like this again. So now they get to Parasuram and they also say the same thing. And they go through all the different avatars. It's quite humorous, but their hearts are pinched. They're very much, you know, feeling sad over the whole thing. It says, oh Parashuram, you are right to be, they're saying, oh Parashuram means, oh Krishna, oh Parashuram, Krishna, you are right to be hard on this girl that wishes to conquer your capital. But I do not understand why your guru, Lord Shiva, now walks on the path of righteousness. So this is a very, you know, it's ambiguous. They're speaking like in double language, obviously. Oh Lord, my girlfriend wants to jump from the mountain and commit suicide, and thus it is logical for you to be hard on her. Oh Bhrigupati, it is very difficult to understand your activities when you have even forgotten your father Nanda Maharaj, who is so dear to you. From the viewpoint of Bhrigupati, oh Lord, Radha is trying to conquer your capital city, and so you are naturally cruel to her. Still, your activities are hard to understand, for you have abandoned even your own guru Shiva when you became unable to maintain the bow he had given you, being defeated by Ramachandra. So this kind of brings the pastime of Parashuram with all its blood and guts and guillotining and beheading and reheading and beheading and reheading and making new heads and lusty, adulterous wives getting killed on the spot. Because that's actually the manasami, that's the penalty for adultery. Even this is mental adultery. Because in those days, one would get this penalty even for mental adultery. Being killed, that was the punishment, or is the punishment. Nowadays, I don't know what they do, but so now we bring it to Krishna Leela. The gopis are talking, comparing Krishna to Bhrigupati, to Parashuram. That they're trying to attack your capital, like the soldiers of Kartavirajan, they were trying to attack. I mean, the sons, rather. So Krishna's being very hard on Radharani. Just like Parashurama so hard on the Kshatriyas. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.